we take a look at Parsha Kisavu, the very first part over there.
Okay.
The scribe, you know, about Binyan Bikurim. Okay. Good always to have reference to, you know, to see where in the Torah does it say this. Not talking in the Velta line,
right.
It's based upon something, okay? All right.
Exactly. Thank you.
All right, why don't we turn to page 859?
Okay. Yeah, 859?
Yeah.
Before we start, can I just ask you, this
sure.
is way off the subject, what is the word in Hebrew for scars? Or if you get malchut, you're going to have scars. What is the word?
Well, usually the word would be chabura, but they'll probably have other words as well.
Chabura,
takat chabura, for example. Give somebody a good beating, you know, black and blue marks all over and so on. So you deserve it. Except, of course, we say that it doesn't mean that they're going to give it to you. It means that you have to pay compensation. Okay? All right. We have over there, of course, the business about the Korim, and it says that when you come to the land which God will give you, right, and you inherit it, you dwell in it, in other words, you have to live there in peace. Okay? And then you have to take, you know, Mirashis called Pri Adama, from the first of all the fruit of the ground. Okay? And you put it to Samta Batena, you have to put it into a basket, right? And you have to go to the place, you have to go to the place which God has chosen, that there His glory will dwell, okay? So, naturally, in other words, it means you have to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, okay? And then what happens when you bring your basket of first fruits over there? And then it's written, "Vosel Hakohen Asher Yevayimahem," that you come to the priest who is at that particular time. All this and so that every word has a different drash. A very beautiful drash for this, but tonight I just want to give the highlights of the ceremony. Okay. Then the Omarte Lo. You have to make the following declaration. And what is the declaration? You have to say, "Higadati Hayom Hashem Lekecha." I declare this day unto the Lord of my God, right? "Kivosi El Haoretz," that I've come to the land, "Asher Nishba Hashem LaLishem LaSizlonu," which you know the Lord swore to our ancestors to give to us. And then what happens after he says this first line? Then it's written, "V'lokach Hakoyin Miyotena Miyotecha," right? Then the priest has to take this basket from your hand, the nichol of day is bachar Hashem lekecha, and he places it before the altar of the Lord your God, and then you continue with your declaration. Now, in reality, I don't know whether the kohen took the basket immediately, even before he finished reciting the rest, or not. Because generally speaking, we consider that he recited all the verses. What does he recite? He recites what we read in the Seder on Pesach. As a matter of fact, I'll come back to a theory of one of my late teachers about that. Okay, but anyway, you have to say before the Lord your God, right? Arami Obed Ovi, right? By Yerim Mitzrayim. In other words, you give a little review of Jewish history. How the Jews were wanderers, and then they wound up in the land of Egypt, and how the Egyptians treated us. You know, they afflicted us, and so on. They laid upon us hard bondage, and we cried unto the Lord, the God, and God heard our prayers. Then God took us out of Egypt, and so on and so forth. He brought us to this place. He gave us this land, Eretz Zovah Cholvet Vash, right, the land flowing with milk and honey. The Atov. And now, Hinei Hevesis Reishis Pri Hadoba, I have brought the very first fruits of the ground, Hashem Nesatol Yoshem, the Hinach Tov, and you are to place it says, "The day of Hashem Lekech, Mishtachavisol Tehem Hashem Lekech." you are to place it before the Lord your God. In other words, what happens, you give it to the Kohen, put it down on the ground, you hold it, right? And then you have to prostrate yourself in the base of Hamikdash before the God, and then you are to rejoice in all the good things that God has given you. In other words, go out and celebrate the fact that you brought Bikurim. But what happens to the Bikurim? What happens to the basket of Bikurim? They go to the Kohen, exactly.
Kohen.
Yeah, this goes to the Kohen, the Kohen takes it, and you know, he has to eat it. Rejoicing. All right, now where can he eat it? The answer is it has to be eaten in the Beis HaMikdash, in Yerushalayim, yes. Okay? All right. So, that's the first passage that we have over here. Okay? So we see that with the Bikurim, the Mishnah says that if a Kohen ate the Bikurim, obviously when it says Ha'oichel Bikurim, it can only refer to a Kohen. Can't refer to the person who's bringing the Bikurim because he's not allowed to eat it. This has to be given to the Kohen. So let's say the Kohen ate Bikurim before Achleikor Alehem, before the other person had an opportunity to recite what we've just read, all these various verses, you know, thanking God for what he did to us in Jewish history and bringing us there to Israel and giving us the plan. Okay, so in that case, what happens to this coin? He deserves
Malchus.
Okay, case number one. Case number two, Kodshei Kadoshim Chutz L'Kloyim. All right, now the question is, what are Kodshei Kadoshim? All right, because the Torah refers to certain sacrifices of being holy of holies. In other words, most holy sacrifices, okay? But an easy way to find out is when we take a siddur and we take a look at Ezehel Mekoyman, and we see, you know, the enumeration of the various sacrifices that are there, and we see which are marked Kodshei Kadoshim. In reality, there are three that are marked as Kodshei Kadoshim. Okay? One is the Ola, which is, of course, a burnt offering. The next is the Chatos, which is the sin offering. As I said, this has to be brought when you suddenly come to realize that you did wrong and you want to atone for it, so that's why it's called a chatos. And then the third one, which is, you know, called Kodshei Kadoshim, is the Osham. The Osham is a trespass offering. Now that you bring for certain specific things that are mentioned in the Torah, particularly towards the end of Sedra Vayikra, where they go into, you know, what are some things that you do.
That's
for example, let's say if you stole something, okay? So in that particular case, you want to make up for your having stolen something, you confess that you did it, and you bring an usher, okay? Or, let's say, you're supposed to give testimony in a case, and you fail to give testimony. Okay, the huay, the yoshem, and so on, and so on. Okay, another case that's mentioned is, for example, that a nozir has to bring it as part of the purification process, and so on. Okay, and there are other cases too. At any rate, as I said, it's for certain definite mention, otherwise, you don't bring it. An osham, okay, although we do have something called an osham tolui. I don't know if you've heard the expression Oshem Talui, literally
Talui.
A hanging Oshem. What does Talui mean? Talui means it depends upon what. So the question is, what does it depend
like
on?
Like two pieces of fat on a plate of fat.
Well, okay, right. Good. It's a good example that you don't know whether you ate shuman,
right,
which is permitted fat, or whether you ate chalev, which is prohibited fat. Okay. Since you don't know, but you want to be on the right side, so in that case, you bring an osham, and this is called an osham tolui. It's held in abeyance, so to speak, and then if you find out definitely what, that it was, let's say, shuman after all, then that's it. You've completed whatever obligation you had. But if you discover that Yitaka ate chaleb, then in that case, The Yoshem Talui only serves as a temporary stopgap, but you have to bring a chalakah in order to tell him fully, you know, for this sake. Okay? All right. So at any rate, there are various types of Osher. Okay? There's also Osher Meshifra Charufa. If there's a Canaanite slave who has never been given in marriage, and you know, you have intercourse with her, so in that case you have to bring an Osher. In other words, you don't get off carte blanche, okay? So you have to bring an Osher for that. Now, that being the case, why are these called kosher kadoshim? The answer is because these have to be eaten with nimin hakloyim, which is what the Torah says, which means literally within the hangings, in other words, within the precincts of the Beis HaMikdash. And the only ones who are allowed to eat either the chatas or the yoshim are zichrei kehunas, we say. In other words, male kohanim. Not females, not their children. Well, I suppose maybe a male child would be permitted, but you can't give it, you know, in general to members of the family. It has to be eaten. I'm not even sure about whether your family could eat, even though you have your son, because generally speaking, it was given to the Kohen who performed the sacrifice and to other Kohanim who were there on the Mishmar. Right. Mm-hmm. It was their turn, you know, for Kohanim duty.
It must have been quite a problem, though, in, you know, the service.
Oh, yeah. So obviously, they didn't have one Kohen. They had an army of Kohanim.
Talmud, they have they describe the bringing of the Bikurim is very interesting because of it's so ceremonial. The people that had, let's see, came from Ekron Yaakov, just making a. They would come and they would have oxen that would come before them.
Right.
And the skilled craftsmen from Jerusalem would come out and greet them.
Welcome to you, people from so and
right,
so, yes. This shtetl, that shtetl,
right,
this
right.
province, that province, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and,
right.
And if they had, in order to bring it, they had brought a lot of fruit that was not fungible in order to use, like raisins, then they would. They would kind of straighten out the basket, so they'd have the raisins in the basket, but whatever fresh dates or whatever they would have, they put on top. And this is how all the baskets were put. It was required a lot of planning and
ceremony. And generally speaking, people tried to bring it in connection with Shavuot's festival, which was called Hagabirit. But if you weren't there for Shavuos, you could come any time after that and bring it.
Can you imagine the logistics?
Yeah.
So that when the Jews went into Eretz Yisrael, it was at least 600,000, right?
Right.
Yeah, and certainly they must have been multiplied and increased, right?
Mm-hmm. I have no doubt that they did.
All right. Yeah. Because that's what the Torah says.
Right.
It may have been as high as 1.5 million, 2 million people.
Right.
You imagine, too. And assuming that 10% of them, 10% of them were sinners, or had to bring a chatos or bring a carbon, could be a real parade.
Well, let me ask you another thing. What was it like on Pesach when everybody brought
a
carbon?
Right.
They may have had half a million of these that had to be slaughtered.
The Mishnah describes, you know, how. They would bring it and they would pass the buckets, you know, because it had to be sprinkled on the altar, you see.
Yeah, of course.
So it was the whole business over there.
Had
a bucket brigade of Kahanim.
Must have had 2,000 Kohanim that sometimes took a while.
It's quite possible. Because if you remember, we learned in Tainus. We learned about the Mishmarot and so forth, that while they were divided into 24 watches,
right.
And each one had a week, but all bets were off as far as the Yom Tevim are concerned.
Right.
You know,
everybody
they needed as many as possible, right. All right, let's finish the Mishnah. We'll call it a night, and then next week in Yitzhak Hashem, we'll start from the Gemara.
Okay. Well, didn't they have other places? Didn't they go to Shiloh and so on, places like that?
To Shiloh.
Shiloh.
Yeah. Prior to the building of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, they had temporary places. Right. I mean, they had Shiloh, they had No.
Divided up into the traffic.
No. Correct. But they didn't have exactly the same Kedusha. They had Kedusha, but it was not exactly the same as the Beis HaMikdash. So certain things, according to the Gemara and Mizrachim, were brought over there. It doesn't mention Bikurim.
No.
It doesn't mention Bikurim. Because that had to be brought specifically to Yerushalayim, apparently. Yeah. But, certain offerings they could give, what they called the Dorim Nedovis, which we'll speak about in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So far, it's Kodshei Kodoshim, Chutz L'Kloyim. Let's say the Kahanim ate either a Chatos or a Noshim, and they ate it not within the temple, but outside the Beis HaMikdash. In that case, they deserve Malkus. Or Kodshim Kalim. What is Kodshim Kalim? Kodshim Kalim are other types of sacrifices, like, for example, Shlomi and Todo, so on, okay? Where, these were already eaten not just by the Kahanim, but normally what they did is each body, you had shares. Rabbeinu Shalalem got his share on the altar. Okay, what they call Amurim, in other words, the chalev, parts of the lobe on the kidney, and so on and so forth, okay? This was burnt, okay? The Kahanim, they got their share too. Mm-hmm. They had, the shok and the chazeh, okay? The shok, the amin, in other words, the right rear section over there. So that was given to the Kahanim. That was a gift, okay? And actually, it was the right form, because it says Zeroah. So it's Zeroah, right? And then Halchayim, they also had the cheek part, right? The Hakeva. Hakeva means that they got part of the stomach, but actually it's the Chosek, usually. The brus was given to the Kahanim. And then whatever parts were not, that went to anybody. I mean, the person who would bring it, and they could invite his whole family to sit down and to eat and everything else, okay? So this is the way it worked. All right, so at any rate, what would Kodshim Kalim or Maaser Sheni, Chutz L'Choma? In other words, the Kodshim Kalim still could not be eaten where? Any place except within Yerushalayim. And the same thing is true of Maaser Sheni, which we learned specifically. It must be eaten within Yerushalayim. So if he ate at Chutz L'Choma, in other words, outside of the walls of Yerushalayim, then in that case he gets Malka. Some of this we already had referred to in the previous pages, by the way. Okay. Now we have another thing that's brought. Hashem is a etzim of Pesach HaTohar. Okay. There's a law in the Torah that we find towards the end of Parsha Bo. We're sitting over there. Zois chukas haPesach, right? These are the laws of Pesach. Kol benecho leyachalo. In other words, a person who's not a Jew is not allowed to partake of the korban Pesach. A person who is not circumcised is not allowed to eat it. Okay. Kol orel leyachal boy. And then another pasuk over there says we etzim leisish berubo. You're not allowed to break the bone of the Korban Pesach. It has to be eaten as is, without breaking bones. Normally a person can break a bone, right? You eat a piece of meat and you have a bone in there, you can break it if you want it. We still remember how my father, Olam HaSholem, loved to have what he called the bark, the marrow of the bone, I used to enjoy it too. It's been a long time since I had it. But it's a memory I have. But with Korban Pesach, you're not allowed to break the bone and eat the bark. Right. It's prohibited. So if it is Pesach Tohor, in other words, the Korban Pesach was 100% kosher, then in that particular case, if you were to break the bone, you're violating the law of the Torah. So in that case, what does it say? Harei Zelokin, and you get Malkus. Hari said, look, our boy, right? You get 40-year lashes. Avol, however, Amosir Betoho. What happens? You had a Korban Pesach, right? And you know, when does it have to be finished eating? At Chatzos, right? By midnight, yeah. You have to finish eating Korban Pesach, okay? What happened, however, if some meat were left over?
It
had to be burned, okay? All right. Do you get malchus for failing to burn it? This is another question. Okay? So, Amosi Betomei, or Hashover Betomei, let's say that the Korban Pesach actually turned out to be unclean. So, in that case, if it's unclean and you break the bone of it, you're not committing an offense against what the Torah says. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, in that case, ain't no loy cowboy. It doesn't get 40 lashes. And then something that we already mentioned before, because they're quoting it from the Mishnah, obviously, this Mishnah, Anotelem Albonim, if a person takes, you know, the mother bird together with the fledgling birds, so Rabbi Yehuda says, Loke, the Yena Mishalim, that he gets Malkas, the Yena Mishalech, and he does not set the bird free. Why? Well, we learned that already before. I just want to call your attention to it. We learned it because, according to his system, if we have an affirmative, a negative command, and then it's followed by an affirmative command, then in that particular case, the negative command that you have violated means that you violated a negative command and deserve malchus for it.
Right.
Whereas the Chachomim have what system? That if you have a negative command, but it's followed by an affirmative command,
anything.
Or the other way around, you will have a chance to make it go, to make it up. As we said, Allah Hanitak La'aseh, right? That you have a chance to take this negative command and make it into an affirmative command because the Torah gives you a way out for doing it, and in that case, you don't get malchus, right? That Mishaleach, what he should do is instead to set the bird free, right? The Enoloik. Zeaklal. And this, they say, is the general rule. Kol mitzvah loisatze. Every negative commandment, sheyeshbo kumase, which has an affirmative way in order to make good for it, so en chayom elov, then you don't get malchus for it. Alright.
Which
we
learned
that before.
Does
he have to set free?
The mother bird.
He should set for the mother bird.
Send the mother bird away.
Torah specifically says the mother bird. Okay? First it says that the kacha im albonim, right? Alabonim. And then it says, shaleach to shalach es ha'im. Set free the mother. Okay?
Okay.
So we are.
So we are now in the middle of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, right? And we'll start from the Gemara and Yitz Hashem next week. So remember, next week we'll start not later than 10 minutes after 7. Okay? So at least we can learn for at least another 45 minutes. All right. Omer Avavachal. All right. So we start with the Gemara now.
Right.
Gemara is referring to the very first statement in the Mishnah, which says, "Ochel bikurim ad shelo kora aleihem." Right, that if a person eats bikurim, of course, the only person who is allowed to eat bikurim, we already said, is the kohen to whom you give it as a gift. You know, you bring it in your basket, you place it down on the ground, you make your declaration, and then. After that, you lay it down on the ground again, and the kohen gets it. Okay. So this is what we said is the procedure. Now, what does he have to read? Naturally, he has to read. And I showed you the psukim in the Torah, where he has to say Arami Oved Odi. First of all, he has to say Higadati Hayom Hashem Alekecha. I declare this day before the Lord our God that I have come to this land. And then he starts in with his declaration, right? Arami Oved Ovi, my father was a wanderer, or as the Sifrei interprets it, and this is what we read in the Passover Haggadah, namely that Lavan HaArami wanted to destroy our ancestor. In other words, it's a picture of, you know, that the people of Israel have continually faced the problem of those who hated the Jews and wanted to destroy them. And as a result, in other words, we review the fact that the people of Israel came down to Egypt, and that Pharaoh enslaved them and made them and tormented them, made their life miserable, and then they cried out to God, and God took us out from the land of Egypt. Beyot Chazoku, we say the two male Godel, Rishwatim Gedoin, right, with the great judgment, etc., great power, great judgment, and so on and so forth. Okay, so this is what he has to declare, and then he says at the end of the Atah, Hinei Hevesi Esreishis Periha Domo Asher Nesata Liyad Hashem, right? Behold, I have brought unto you, O God, the first fruits of the land which God has given unto me. And then it says, V'nachtol Zeyav Shem Lekech, and then you put it down again before the Lord your God. You have to prostrate yourself with the Elsham Lekech. And then it says, after that, you rejoice in all the goodness that God does for you. Okay. So, as we pointed out, who gets to eat the Bikurim? Not the person who brings, but the Kohen. Exactly, the Kohen. So, let us say now that the Kohen decided he's given a basket of fruit, so he grabs it even before the man had an opportunity to recite the declaration. Okay? So, this is what the Mishnah says. So, Ochel Bikurim, right? Ad Shelo Kor Aleihem. The person eats Bikurim before the man who is bringing the Bikurim has recited, you know, what he has to say, right? So, in that case, this is included among those who deserve what?
Malkus.
Who deserve Malkus. Okay. So that this is what we read. So Omar Rav Bachon, he says, Omar Rav Yochanan said, Zu Divrei Rabbi Akiva's Timon. He says that this opinion that we have in the Mishnah is really the opinion of Rabbi Akiva without mentioning him by name. Stimo, you know, is the word in the Hebrew which means to conceal. In other words, his name is concealed, not given to us. So let's take a look at the Rashi. Here Rashi is very invaluable. We'll go step by step with the text of the Rashi. Mm-hmm. All right. Rashi says, the Divrei Rabbi Akiva says, Masnisim, the Mishnah, the Kotoni Bikurim, right, where we learn that in the case of Bikurim, Kariyo Me'akva Behum, in other words, you know, the recital of the verses of the Torah, if it is omitted, then it's going to invalidate the giving of the, you know, this presentation of Bikurim. So he says, Rabbi Akiva, this is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Shehoya rogil rabbi listom devarov v'mishnah v'stah v'chama mekomas. And Rashi adds over here, he says that Rabbi, who was, of course, Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi, you know, the great Tana who presided over the Sanhedrin and who edited the Mishnah, so he decided at this particular point not to mention the name of who made, you know, who held this particular opinion. And he did so in many other places as well. The Chama Mekomos means in other places as well. All right. The Hochish Mi'alei Rabbi Yochanan. And so, Rabbi Yochanan had a tradition. This is what it means by Shamia. Literally, it was heard. Right? In other words, he had a tradition. He had a Rebbe who taught him what? The Islay the Rabbi Akiva Kariyo Mi'akibakun. That Rabbi Akiva has the opinion that if you don't read the recital over the Bikurim, then it's going to invalidate the ceremony. Okay? So far, this is what Rabbi Avachola says. He says, this is Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Avol Chachomim, Omrim, however, the sages say something different. What do they say? They say, Bikurim, Hanocha ma'akeves b'hen, but kriya ein ma'akeves b'hen. Again, to be kurim, the Chachamim say that if you fail to put down the basket, that would invalidate the bringing of the Bikurim. But failure to recite the Arami Oved Ove, etc., this would not invalidate it. Okay, obviously, to begin with, it should be. After all, the Torah says so. But the question is, according to Chachamim, is this, you know, shall we say, in the category that you must do this, or it is suggested that you do this? You understand? Because if it is a must do this and you fail to do it, then you deserve Balkans, according to the Mishnah. But if, you know, it's only in the category that it's a nice part of the ceremony and it should not be omitted, but if you failed, you know, if you did omit it, it doesn't invalidate the fact that you brought Bikurim and you put it down. So the question is, according to Chachamim, did he put the basket of the Bikurim down before the altar of God? That, if he failed to do, that would invalidate.
What does the Torah say?
Torah says that you have to do both, but it doesn't mention whether it invalidates or it doesn't invalidate. I gave you orally what the Torah had to say, okay? But, you know, read it again and you'll see that, you know, it says that when you come to the land and you enjoy all these things, then you should go and so on and so forth, you know, take the first fruits of the land and so on, bring it to Yerushalayim, place it in the basket, not the Yerushalayim over there, but the place which
make
God
the declaration.
Right. And, right.
Torah
and
does
you have
say
to
make the declaration.
Yeah, of course. But as I said, there are things that the Torah can say, you understand, that are in the nature of this is the right thing to do, as compared to that the Torah might also imply that, you know, that this is an absolutely sine qua non. If you don't do it, then the whole thing is thrown out. So the question is, why hatnocha, according to the rabbi, you understand? Why they say that placing the basket down would invalidate the Bikurim if you fail to place the basket down before the altar, whereas they say that the other one isn't. So this is what Rashi is talking about now. That's the next Rashi. Do you see the word hanocha?
Yeah.
Okay. So it says hanocha lepnei hamizbeach me'akeves b'hem. Placing down before the altar of this basket, if you fail to do it, then it would invalidate the bringing of the Bikurim. But why? It says, the Shana Bokra, the reason being because in the Torah we find this idea repeated twice in this passage. I'll read you again what it says at the beginning of Parsha Kisavom. Okay? It says, Vosala Kohen, right? You have to come to the Kohen, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to say to him, "Igalati Hayom Alishem Lakecha." I want to declare that, you know, today my gratitude to God that I come to this land. And then the next pasuk says, "Volokach Hakohen Hatenu Yodecha." The Kohen is to take the basket from your hand. The Hinicho is to place it to the Mizbach Alishem Lakecha. So that's the.
So the client puts it down on the point of sale, not the
right.
Person
right. Okay. And then it says, "We'll need to be a martyr," and you make the declaration. And after the declaration, the next pasuk says, "Viato." And now, "Hinei hevesis reishis bri ha'adama." I've brought you the first fruit, which you, O Lord, have given unto me. "The hinachto," and you shall place it. This is what it says.
You
shall place it. Okay. So. What is the assumption? The assumption is that the Kohen first put it down on the altar, in front of the altar, right? He makes the declaration, and the two of them raise this together, and this time, you know, the person who's being Bikurim has a hand in putting it down, so that he actually is taking part, you know, not just bringing the fruit, but he actually places it before the altar. This is the idea, okay? So since placing the basket is mentioned twice, not once, right? And the Rashi quotes, you know, the first time it says v'hinicho lifnei, rather he's to place it, and then it says v'hinachto, and you shall place it lifnei. So for that reason, this is why the Chachamim say that this is an absolute essential to the service, whereas the declaration is not necessarily essential, but it should be done. Actually, they don't minimize it, it's understood. Part of the whole idea of Bikurim is the fact that you want to declare your gratitude to God for the gifts that he gives you. He gives you ample fruit, ample food, and things like that. So it's a matter of being grateful to God, and you have to demonstrate it. You know, I have to tell you, it grieves me at times when I see, you know, when it's time to bench, and after all, we enjoy benching together, and instead of benching, somebody talks to the neighbor and things like that. After all, this is considered, we learned this in Brachas, that it's considered a mitzvah for the Torah. The Torah commands us, right? Right, the Achaltim is of the Yerachta, that when you eat and you are satisfied, you shall bless the Lord your God, you see. And why should we neglect a mitzvah which is so significant to us by simply talking and instead of even, benching? We get up, if you remember what they used to say, once upon a time, about Yaakov Esav. It's written, you know, that Esav says to Yaakov, I want you to give me this red stuff and so on, right?
Porridge.
And then, right, and so after that, you say porridge. We don't know whether it's porridge or lentil soup. Yeah, but according to tradition, it was lentil soup, okay? So, Yaakov gives Esav the soup, okay? Then it's written, by Yochal, by Yesh, he ate, he drank, by Yochal, he got up, by Yela, and he went. So, as the Malamda used to say, right, of a bench in the Hatishka bench. So this is a right. I thought with your eyes, Kalan, but he neglected them. What I was going to do. Unfortunately.
Ace of his aces, that's all.
All right, so getting back to the Gemara right now. Okay, so we see that according to the Chachamim, right, that it's the Hanocha which is Ma'akevis, in other words, which would invalidate it if you failed to do it, and not the Kriya. All right, so far, suggestion number one was that the author was Rabbi Akiva, and this was Rabbi Akiva's opinion. So now the Gemara comes up and it says, "Valema zu divrei Rabbi Shimon stimo." Maybe this is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, also without being mentioned by name. Hakamashmalon. From this, we learn that the Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon's real name, that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon, they both have the same opinion. Namely, that if you left out the declaration, then in that case, you deserve malchus for having failed to do so. Okay? So now they want to know, my Rab Shimon, where do we find that Rab Shimon says something like this?
Well, who deserves the malchus? The Kohen.
If the Kohen did, right.
Yeah,
obviously. Because the lay person would not eat of it. He knows that he has to bring to the Beis HaMikdash.
Okay.
Once it's in the Beis HaMikdash, he's not going to grab an apple or a pear or whatever it may be.
I just want to make that clear.
So now the Gemara wants to know, in my Rabbi Shimon, so tell me, they say, which statement of Rabbi Shimon? There are thousands of statements of Rabbi Shimon. The question is, which Rabbi Shimon? That is, which statement of Rabbi Shimon are you referring to, where you say that he's in agreement with the same opinion? So they say, the Tanya, as we have learned, probably it should be read, none, but that's all right, it doesn't make any difference. We've learned it says, the word says, Usrumas Yadecha. Now, in order to understand this, remember last week I gave out the promotion, but again, we could share a couple of promotions to say. This is in reference to Meiser, okay? take a look in Yud Beis or in the second page, okay? Okay.
Yud Beis?
Yeah.
All right.
All right, let's take a look first of all on page 801, okay? 801. All right, over here we see, first of all, you know, that we're not to do sacrifice in any place at all, but it has to be given HaBokim HaShiv Karashem L'Keichem HaKol Shefeichem, right? That's verse 5. And then it says, "Vaveisem shomo leseichem tefchechem." Right, you shall bring over there, right, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, right, okay, and so on and so forth. The yes, masvah seichem, yes, tumas yedchem, and you know, whatever you are offering free willingly, okay. V'nidreichem, v'nidveseichem, of course, v'karchem, v'tzonchem. In other words, you have to bring all these various types of sacrifices there. To where? To the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? Then, they repeat it again on the following page, beginning with verse 11. To come to pass, right, that the place which God has chosen, and so on, with. So it says, Shomot Tavio, Eis Kol Shonach Mitzavetzchem, right, Ola Seichem, Zivchechem, Asvetzchem, Sot Yedchem, Echom Yivchem, Nivchem. It's a repeat of what we had before, okay? Mm-hmm. So we see it's important, okay? Mm-hmm. All right. Then, after that, it continues. First of all, it says, Rak Hadom Lo Socheilu, that's verse 16, you're not allowed to eat the blood of the animal, right? Alos Tishpechenu Kamoyim, you have to spill it on the ground, you know, so that it flows like water. Then it says, next pasuk 17, Lo suchal echol bisharecha, you are not allowed to eat, right?
Right.
Within your gates, which in this case we refer, as we'll see, any place where you live, literally, okay? Not allowed to eat any place at all. Yeah, Masar de Gonchov de Rosh Vatsarecha, in other words, this is the Miser, right? The tithe, right? Corn, wine, oil, the Choros, the Korcho, also the firstborn of your cattle and your sheep, your flocks, right? The Cholded Orecha, Sher Tidor, right? The Nidrosecha, Tumas Yodecha. So he is going to teach now the various words that we have in this Pasuk to refer to different types of offerings that are going to be. Now, so we'll see, it's going to be a very ingenious interpretation on the part of Rabbi Shimon. Okay. What do we learn? So he says, first of all, Trumas Yodecha. Okay, what does that refer to? What is the offering of your hand? So he says, Elo Bikurim. This refers to the Bikurim, because you bring your first fruits, you know, with your hand. You bring it with the basket and so on. So, Omer Rab Shimon said, Ma bozel elam deinu. What do these two words, you know, Trumas Yodachov, right? What is it here to teach us? Im liyochlom chutz lachoymo. If you say that it is to tell us that you're not allowed to eat it outside of Yerushalayim, literally outside the wall, but it means outside the walls of Yerushalayim, then kal v'chomer m'maaser hakal. Then in that particular case, this we learn already, that in the case of Maaser, where it said that you have to eat it, you know, l'fnei ad Hashem alekecha, in other words, you know, it has to be eaten in Yerushalayim itself, as we said, right? And we also say that the Maaser has easier laws as compared to the Bikurim, to the first, the Lord, the first group. How is it easier? The answer is because Maaser can be eaten by anybody. You can eat it, your wife can eat it, your children can eat it, and so on. The only restriction on it is what? It has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. Okay? I'm not sure you're talking about Maaser Sheni in this case. Okay? Because as we said, Maaser Rishon is given to the Levi, and the Maaser Oni is given to the poor person. But we're talking about the Maaser Sheni. Alright, so Maaser Sheni, we know you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. Okay. So, but it can be eaten by anybody. Whereas Bikurim, the first fruits, we put a restriction on it, right? We said that only the kohen can eat it. So that therefore, if in the case with the easier, where it's the easier situation, namely in Maaser, it has to be eaten within Yerushalayim, then certainly Bikurim, which is already a stricter rule, right? That certainly has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. Okay. Gone's fine.
That's the Kal V'Chomer.
That's the Kal V'Chomer. So far, we've learned now then from Maaser, right, that Bikurim has to be eaten within Yerushalayim. Okay. And he says, you know, Ho lo bo ha-kosuv elo li'echum bikurim, right? Achalikor aleihem. So, why then do we have to have a pasuk to tell us about Bikurim that there has to be eaten in Yerushalayim? So that therefore, if we have a pasuk, he says, then in that case it has to teach us something additional. And what is the something additional that it has to teach us? It has to teach us the fact that you're not allowed to eat Bikurim, namely of course the Kohen, before the declaration of gratitude has been recited for them. Okay? Now this is the case.
Rabbi Shimon.
Yeah, right. This is Rabbi Shimon's opinion. All right, let's take a look at the Rashi for a moment. The next Rashi over there, the name was a different Rabbi Shimon.
He's different than the Chachamim.
Yeah, because the Chachamim, as we said, they said that this is not Ba'akev, it's not invalidated. Whereas, you know, the Hanokha, they say, is Ba'akev. Okay?
Okay.
All right, so Rashi says, the name is a different Rabbi Shimon, right? Let's say that this is the word of Rabbi Shimon, not Rabbi Akiva. So the Hevelei, the Suisiyat of the Milse Mastisen, because he had to bring a support for his point of view from what we're teaching a little bit further on. The Shamin, the Rabbi Shimon, the Ho, that the Islay, we read the Mastisen, the Kriya Makva Bahu, says my Rabbi Shimon, where do we have it? So he says it's through Mas Yodecho. It says Sefe Dahai Kroa Hu Lo Sukha Lecho B'Sharecha, right? What follows this particular pasuk in the Torah? It says you're not allowed to eat within your gates, right? In other words, as we said, any place else except where? In Yerushalayim. Matzah Degoncho Teresh V'Sharecha, right? So we see that they're both equated, that both of them have to be eaten in Yerushalayim. Then it says afterwards, alright, and we'll come to the Dorish Rabbi Shimon, the Kol Nesefei. He says Nesefei Reishe the Yehava Dorish. Well, alright, so this is already a different story. Okay, but he says Im La'Eicha Bikurim, we'll get back to that afterwards, but Im La'Eicha Bikurim, if it is to tell us simply not allowed to eat Bikurim outside of Yerushalayim, right? Mustachoma, Lesol, Kedemashma, Kro, Lo Sukal, Lechol, Bishorecha. So, we can learn Kabachom, Masra, Akal, Sharei, Ksiv, Bitkila, Sanikro, because at the beginning of the Pasuk it says, Matzah, Degoncha, right? Ulakame, and afterwards, we, Benforish explains, My Chomer, the Bikurim, the Masra, afterwards we'll learn, maybe we should turn the tables around. But anyway, he says, Achalikor. Alright, so far we understand, okay, that if we base it on the Kal V'Chomer, right, from Maaser, then just as you cannot eat Maaser outside of Yerushalayim, even though anybody can eat it, so Bikurim, certainly, which is restricted in that only a Kohen can eat it, that still has to be it. Okay, right. So this is what we say, if it's not appropriate, for one thing, then let's take this thing. We already learned, in other words, from the Kal V'Chomer, what? That Bikurim has to be eaten in Yerushalayim, right? So why do we need a pasuk for it? So the answer is, we need a pasuk to tell us something else, namely that Bikurim cannot be eaten by the Kohen before the recital of Arami Ovidomi. Okay? All right. Now he continues. That's a little beyond the halfway mark, okay? So if a person should, if she happened to eat Bikurim outside of the walls of Yerushalayim, Loka, he would get Malkus. So Bikurim le culture came, right? In the case of Bikurim, certainly so. So Holo Gola Kosov Elo le Orchem le Bikurim, right? That the teaches that if a person eats Bikurim, Achele Koralehen, before the declaration of gratitude was made, Shehu Loka. All right. Now, takes the next word, Vinid Bosecha. Now, of course, we know if I would talk about a word, the Dobo, immediately we think, you know, you give it the Dobo, it's a poor man, and so you give it the Dobo. But Nidbo Secha over here doesn't mean that. Nidbo Secha means anything which you offer free willing, out of your own free will, to the Rebbeinu Shalom. All right. So what is that? So it says, Zu Toido Ushlomi. This refers to the types of sacrifices that we call thanksgiving offerings and peace offerings. Why are they Nidbo? Because you're not required as a normal rule to bring these. Actually, there is a requirement for Toda, I have to tell you. Because when are we expected to bring a Korban Toda?
Thanksgiving.
Yes, huh?
For Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, yeah. When are we expected to do it? Instead of a turkey, right?
We bring Korban Toda.
But the answer is, we have Psalm 107, okay, Kuf Zayin. And over there, they go through a whole list of events where it says, you know, that, Yolo Lashem Chasto, you have to give thanks unto God for his loving kindness because he delivered you from this, that, and the other thing. So they mention various things. One of them, of course, we're familiar with, namely, if a person has gone through a grievous illness, right, and he recovers, he has to express a thanksgiving to God, right? All right, now, we bench Goimil, but in ancient days, while the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, besides benching Goimil, he would also actually bring a thanksgiving offering in order to express his gratitude to God. Okay, so that's why this is sort of in the category of a free will. It's there for a specific reason, but nevertheless, look, if a person was a meanie, didn't want to give, could you compel a person to go and bring a Thanksgiving offering? You understand what I mean?
He wouldn't get Malkus.
Right, he wouldn't get Malkus if he failed to do it. It was the kind of a thing that, of his own free will, that's why I say a free will offering, right?
Okay.
His own free will, he should go and bring this Thanksgiving offering, okay? And of course, Shlomim, peace offerings, there's no question. I mean, that these are brought in order to celebrate with the family, you have good things happen to you in life, and so on. You want to express your gratitude to the Rebbeinu Shalom. So you have a feast for the family, you can invite friends, and so on. Okay, so these are free will offerings, okay? Zuto de Shlomim. And Omar Rab Shimon, Maze Bolam Deinu. Tell me, why did the word Vedid Vosecha come over here? What is it teaching us? Im Liochlam Chutz Lachaim, if you tell me it is that we are prohibited from eating these sacrifices outside the walls of Yerushalayim, right? Kal v'chomer m'maser. Then, this we already learned from Maaser, right?
Yeah.
In other words, Maaser, which is a lot easier, says you have to eat in Yerushalayim, so these which involve already sacrifices, right? So all the more reason that they should be eaten only within where? Within the walls of Yerushalayim. Okay? So, what is he adding over here, says Rabbi Shimon? So he says, this is what he's adding. He says, Elo, but rather, it adds the following, Yisla Oichel Betodo Vishlomim Lifnei Zeriko Shulote, that if a person eats a thanksgiving offering, or a peace offering before the actual blood has been sprinkled on the altar, then in that particular case, in other words, he jumps the gun, starts into eating even before the kohen had a chance to go and sprinkle the blood of the sacrifice on the altar, then in that case he deserves He gets malchus for that. Okay? And of course, Rashi points out, just to save a little time, that besides referring to the Zerika, meaning primarily we always think in terms of the offering, you know, the sprinkling of the blood in the various corners of the altar, okay? But with Toda and Shlomim, you also have something else, and it's what we call Emurim. What are Emurim? Emurim means that you have to give to the Kohen Shtikl, and you have to also burn part of it on the altar, and so on. So this is the Emurim, that you have to take out, and then the rest is permitted to whoever is bringing the sacrifice, you know, to enjoy it together with his family. Okay. So, if any of these actions were not performed prior to his eating, then in that case he deserves malchus because he jumped the gun and started to eat. So this is the new thing, says Rabbi Shimon, that this word in the Tosefta
teaches.
Right. Okay. Now it goes with the next word. Uvechoros. Well, obviously, what are Bechoros? Those are the firstborn animals, okay? It's a law in the Torah that says the firstborn animal, Petarechem, right? One that comes out first from the womb, okay? If it's Bokor or if it's Som, you know, that belongs to, literally, to the Lord your God. It's holy to the Lord your God. But it's not offered as a sacrifice instead. I mean, it is sacrifice, but who gets to eat it? The Kohen, right. This belongs strictly to the Kohen, okay? So it says of a choros, obviously it's a bchor. So I'm a Rab Shimon. So Rab Shimon said, Ma bozel olam deinu. Tell me, what does this word come to teach us? Im liyoklan chutz lachoim, or if you tell me that it's in order to say that it must be eaten within the walls of Yerushalayim, not outside. So kal v'chomer maser. So the maser already told me that. Even if there's Rika, if you tell me that you're not allowed to eat the Bechor before the blood has been sprinkled on the altar, so Kal V'Chomer Metoida, then it's a Kal V'Chomer. We learned this from the fact if Toda can't be, so it's certainly Bechor, which could only be eaten by a Kohen and not by anybody, right? Kal V'Chomer Metoida Shlomer. So he says, Lo, oh, Lo, Boah, Kosher, so what is the new thing that is being added? By the pasuk it says Elo liyoychol min abchor, that if a person eats of the bechor, the firstborn, afilu liachas ariko, even after the blood has been sprinkled, shehu loike, that it's going, that he deserves malchus. Now naturally, who are we talking about over here? Since obviously the kohen is not going to do it before that, right?
You're talking about the people who brought the
what of the guy himself who brings as we would say the zor, in other words the non-kohen, right? He decides that he wants a piece of it. In that case, not allowed.
He wants to taste it,
right? Okay. Even after the sprinkling, but if he's not a Kohen, then he's going to get malchus for doing so. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, how about the next two words? Bekor kovetzonecha, right? Kovetzonecha. It says, you know, your cattle and your sheep. So he says, this refers to chatos v'yoshem. This refers to the sin offering and to the trespass offering, as we call it. Now, remember last week I spoke about the sin offering. I'll repeat again, you know, very brief. Sin offering has to be brought by a person who violated a negative commandment in ignorance. He didn't realize that he was doing wrong. Whether he didn't know that there was a law, or whether he knew it was a law but he didn't think that what he did was wrong or anything like that, and then afterwards he suddenly realizes that he did wrong. So what does he do? So he brings a chatos. He brings a sin offering. Okay? What is the Yoshem? So I said the Yoshem is mentioned in the Torah for certain specific things. That's, for example, Asham Gezelos. You have to bring an Yoshem if you misappropriated somebody's property, stole, misappropriated, okay? Or Hashem Be'ilah, if you, for example, you violated something which belonged to the Beis HaMikdash and you ate it or you used it or something like that.
Isn't that the Korah?
Yeah, it's a Mekorah. You have it, all these things
it's
lifted,
in the,
right.
It's in the Korah.
Exactly. So the point that I'm making is that the Oshem has to be brought for certain specific ones, not as a general one. Oy vey, I did the wrong thing. I had to bring it up. But it's for a certain specific things. All right. But in either case, who eats the Chatas and the Oshem? The answer is, it has to be eaten by the Kohen. Right. So, Omar Rabbi Shimon, so Rabbi Shimon says, what is this come to teach us? If you tell me it has to be eaten within Yerushalayim, then kal v'chomer maaser, that I already know for myself, right? If Nezuriko, if they should eat it before they had before they actually sprinkled the blood on the altar, kal v'chomer b'Torah v'Shlomim, just as we learned in Torah and Shlomim that you're not allowed to do it, so the same would apply over here. Im li'achas v'iko, if it happens afterwards and there was a non-Kohen, as we said, a Zor, then kal v'chomer mibachor, then this we already learned from the Bechor. So, halo baha kosuv, so what therefore does it mention over here? It's there to teach us, elo li'oichel mechatos v'oshem afil li'achas v'iko chutzlak lo'yim shehu lo'yim, that if a person, namely a Kohen in this case, right, if the Kohen eats either chatos or osham, even after the blood has already been sprinkled on the altar, when we say it's correct to do so, right?
Right.
But if he ate it chutz lakloyim, which means outside the precincts of the Beis HaMikdash,
okay.
In other words, this is stricter in that the others we said before can be eaten anywhere
within
the wall of Yerushalayim. But here already, this is already what we call Kodesh Kodoshim, you see. These are holier sacrifices, and therefore they must be eaten by the Kohen only within the precincts of the Beis HaMikdash. So if he ate it chutz lakloyim, outside the temple precincts, shehu lokim, and that Kohen would get malchus.
He would get malchus.
Right. And then we have another word. That word is nidorecho. The Dorecha means literally the things that you vowed to bring. The Dova, as we said before, you know, this is something you give of your own free will, whereas Neder, you make a vow that you're going to do it.
It is very serious.
Right. So, the Dorecha, he says, what does this refer to? He says, Zu Ola. This refers to the burnt offering. Now here we're not talking about the burnt offering which is brought by the congregation of Israel. We know that every morning and every afternoon they would bring a burnt offering, right? You know, we read it, Sabbath Blaze Alan is Babdi Lakhim Yisha, right? Right. So Yisha, this is the fire offering, Shetim Hashem, Kivosim and Eshon of the Bimim, and so on. It has to be a very young lamb, okay, within the first year of its existence, right? And then it's like Kivosachot Hasabah Bokiri, it's like Kivosachit Hasabah Boim, right? In the morning and at Mincha time, that they had to sacrifice them. So that's what we call Korbanos Tzibur, okay? Congregation brings. The same thing for Shabbos. And Yontiv, there are additional ones, what we call Musafim, for the word, which means Musafim, means literally addition. In addition, they had to bring more things, right? Because of the sanctity of the Shabbos, or Rosh Chodesh, or the various festive days, okay? Now, among them would also be an Ola, okay? Or an Isha, a burnt offering. When you use the word Isha, it also means it's like an Ola. Okay. So, what are we talking about over here, since we're not referring to what the congregation has?
Person.
Right.
Person.
a person can also offer an olah.
Mm.
This is what it is. And as a matter of fact, this is what the reference is at the beginning of Parsha Vayikra. The very first chapter in Vayikra deals that if olo korbano, right? In other words, if he decides that he wants to give a free will offering to the Bnei Shalom, but he wants it to be an ola, as a, you know, totally consumed in fire, then in that case, this is what we're talking over here. All right, so what is this? Says Amar Rab Shimon. So Rab Shimon says, Ma bo zel alav deidu. Tell me, he says, what does this word come in order to teach us? If you tell me that you're not allowed to eat it outside of Yerushalayim, if you tell me that it prohibits the eating of an ola before they sprinkle the blood on the altar, that we already learned from the law concerning Toda and Shlomim,
right?
If you tell me that he's permitted to eat it after the sprinkling of the blood, so that we would learn what? We would learn that from the Bechor. If you tell me that it has to be only within the temple precincts and not outside the temple precincts, then so what is it adding over here? He says, the pasuk comes over here and singles out Elo to tell us what? La'oichel min ha'oila le'achas vika. If a person eats the burnt offering after the blood has been sprinkled, afilu bifnim, even within the temple walls, right? Shehu lokeh, that nevertheless he's going to get malchus. In other words, an ola is absolutely prohibited to anyone to eat, even if he fulfilled all the other things that we mentioned before with the other sacrifices. Right. So, Omar Rava, and this I think we'll end with right now because it's time for Mincha. So, Rava said, the Elido Ime, Kerabi Shimon Pele, says, if a mother is going to give birth, she should have a child like Rabbi Shimon. The Elo, lo sili. If not, she shouldn't give birth. Now, of course, the last four words, I don't have to tell you. This is what we would call an extreme exaggeration. As a matter of fact, there are texts of the Gemara where this is left out. There is a famous manuscript of the Gemara called the Munich manuscript.
Munich,
because after it was discovered, it was kept in a library in Munich, state library over there. And it's one of the earliest copies of the Gemara that we have. So these words are not over there, okay? They're missing over there. But even if we would say that, you know, that these four words belonged over here, nevertheless, we understand that this is a little exaggeration to say that a woman shouldn't give birth unless she could have a child like Rabbi Shimon. But it is in order to praise the idea that we should all be blessed with Kindalach, who are so wise and smart and know how to apply logic, and like Rabbi Shimon. So we'll stop at this particular
okay,
point.
Okay, so we're on the third line of Yud Zion.
Right, Yud Zion and Amadeus. Right. Okay. So, Yitz Hashem, next week we'll meet again at 7 o'clock or thereabouts.
10 after 7.
Okay.
Yud Zion Amud Beis. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Now, on page 860, the very bottom over there, you see where it says, Yisachala Maaseris Komasat Vosarashamash Lishi Shemasa Maaseris. All right. The third year, you have to, at the conclusion of the year, you have to go and make the following declaration. First of all, you have to make sure that the Nosato Lalevi, he gave to the Levi, La Ger, La Yosem, La Mono, Yochu Mishrech L'Salim. Naturally, what does the Levi get? So this we know, that the Levi gets my Sarishon, okay? So in other words, I've taken care of that, I gave the Levi his Maisa. La Ger, La Yosem, La Mono, Which Maisa does that refer to? The answer is that, of course, it refers to Maisa Odin, right? In other words, to the poor, right? The one that's eaten, that's given every, you know, the third year of the 60th cycle, right? And then it says, right, you have to make the following declaration. Namely, Biyarti HaKodesh Bid HaBayis. I have removed all the hallowed things out of my house. In other words, I've taken care of all my obligations so that I no longer have in my house those, you know, the grain, the wine, the
what
oil.
What page is that on? 861?
861, yeah. Right. And I gave it, right, La Levi, La Gea, La Yosef, La Monica, all mitzvot, La Shetzim Yisrael, even in accordance with all the commandments that he gave it. And then the next line, line 14, this is what the reference is. Line 14 says, Lo achalti the oni mimenu, lo liyati mimenu betome, lo lesat mimenu lemeis. Okay? In other words, I've not eaten of the miser, right, being an onen in my morning. Now, of course, technically, what is aninus or onen? The answer is from the time that one of your very close relatives, father or mother, brother or sister, a wife or husband, and so on, right, son or daughter, these are the close relatives, right? From the moment that that person dies until the time that that person has been buried, you are in a state which is known as aninus, or pronoun, which means the person who is the onay, okay? So, this pasuk says specifically that miser cannot be eaten when you are in this state of mourning. Or, of course, in the state of tumah, this probably goes without saying, all right? And the means that I did not use my miser, in other words, I didn't sell it, and use the proceeds in order to prepare tachrichin and things like that. This is the way it's understood by Rashi. Okay? So, in other words, what do we see? We see that miser cannot be eaten in the state of aninus, right? But the question is, what about that? I said the Koran before, actually, it's Bikurim. I retract my statement. It's Bikurim, as I originally read it, okay? It says, Bikurim, in other words, are permitted to be eaten even in a state of mourning. So, we cannot say that one is more stringent than the other, because I can turn the argument around and say that, why should I say that it's more stringent? I can show you that, on the other hand, there's a different stringency, which, you know, reverses that situation. Okay? Alright. So, this is the first of the holes that Rava is poking in Rabbi Shimon's argument before, which he based upon a series of Kal Vachomers, that, you know, Malkus would be incurred for this, that, the other thing. As we said before, eating outside Jerusalem, in case of all of these things, or eating outside the Beis HaMikdash in the case of those that have to be eaten only within the Beis HaMikdash, or eating before the sprinkling of the blood, or eating after the sprinkling of the blood, but by somebody who was not entitled to be a Zohar instead of a Kohen, if that's what's the case. And finally, even a Kohen, it could be after the sprinkling and within the temple precincts, within Yerushalayim, etc., etc. But he ate an ola, which he was not allowed to eat, because the ola had to be consumed in its entirety in the Mizbeach. Okay? So, that's why Rava is now saying, I can poke holes in this, the argument is brilliant, he says, but Shimon is brilliant, but I can poke holes. And now he goes down the next thing that he mentioned. Okay? Umay chumra de todo l'shlomim. You say that the thanksgiving and the peace offerings are more stringent the miser than the miser. Why? Because he says Shekain to Unim Matan Domim Beyavurim Legabim Nisbeyach, because of the fact that Torah and Shlomim, they both involve the sprinkling of blood, that's the Matan Domim, upon the altar, the Emurim, and also the Emurim. These are, to remember, there are psukim that speak about the fact that Chelev and Dom, right? The Chelev has to be burnt on the altar, we're not allowed to eat it, okay? Also, there's lobe of the kidneys, the seres bin hakovein, okay, the liver and the lobe of the kidneys, and so on. There are different parts that have to be burnt on the altar. So, Torah and Shlomim require them. So you say, well, for that reason, it shows us that it's more stringent than what? Than Meiser. But I could show you again that Meiser has a stringency which is not applicable to Torah and Shlomim. For example, Adrabi says, Lukavi says, Meiser Chomer. I could show you that the tithe is more stringent. Shekain to Unin Kesef Tzurah, because what they involve is money which has a definite figure, a definite image upon it. In other words, no. Let me explain. This past Shabbos, being that it was Shabbos and second day of Shavuos, we read, you know, about Meiser in general. That in the case of Meiser Sheni, in other words, one that you have to bring to Yerushalayim, what happens if we learn, you know, you let's say you want to bring fruit over there, but the fruit will never make it to you in Shalayim, you know, because they'll rot. So what are you supposed to do? You have to, right, you have to sell it, and then you take the money, and it's written the Tzarta HaKesu B'yotah. You have to tie up the money in literally in your hand. In other words, you make a little bundle, you tie it up,
a knipple,
exactly, and you take this money with you to Yerushalayim, and there you have to spend it on the Chol Asher Tavid Afshecho, everything that your heart desires, Bakor, Batzon, sheep, cattle, yayin, shechor, wine, strong drink, etc., etc., and enjoy yourself before the Levein Shalayim over there. Celebrate Yontem, enjoy it. Okay, so the expression of Tzarta HaKesu B'yotcho means literally you want to make a tzaror, a bundle. But you know that in Hebrew, tzar also means actually to make like an image. Okay, how do I say, for example, an artist, a painter or something like that? The word for that is tsayar, okay, which is a noun made up from the word tsar, okay? And there's a very beautiful interpretation that we learned in the Gemara Brachas many, many, many years ago, where it's written over there, they take the pasuk Ein Tzur Kelokeinu, right? There is no rock like our God. And they said, Ein Tzayar Kelokeinu, interpreted as there is no artist as great as the Rebbeinu Shlomo. He is the true artist, okay? So, what we're talking about over here then is, you can't simply, let's say, exchange it for a piece of silver, piece of gold or something. Of course it says kesef, so it has to be silver, but it has to be kesef which has a tzura. In other words, it has to be a coined piece of silver, because even in the days of the Beis Hamikdash, they already had, you know, silver coins, and that way, you see, they could also be sure that this was real money even as it's written about Abraham Avinu, you know, that he bought the Cave of Machpelah, right? He gave him Arba Beo Shekel Kesev, he gave him 400 silver shekels, Over La Socher, which would be accepted by a merchant. In other words, merchants were very picky as to what kind of money they were going to make.
Legal tender.
Of course, it had to be legal tender. So this is the same thing. It has to be a real coin based upon the fact that the Tzartar Kesef means it has to be Kesef Tzur. Okay. So that is not required for what? It would not be required, for example, let's say Toto Shlomim, let's say the animal needed to be replaced because it developed a blemish or something like that. You understand? Mm-hmm. Because after all, a blemished animal, if it has a wound, as I already said, if it's a permanent wound, then it cannot be used. Okay? So you have to exchange it, let's say, for something else. Well, could you use any kind of money, even on coin silver, for it? The answer is yes. But in the case of mice, it would have to be coins. So this is a chumrah. Now he says, "Am I chumrah the bechor betod v'shlomim?" You said that the bechor is more stringent than the Thanksgiving offering or the peace offering. Shekein kedusha sol mirechem, because the kedusha, the sanctity of the bechor, is derived right from the moment that the animal emerges from its mother's womb. I mean, what do we say? Kaddishni, kol peter rechem, if they Israel, first, well, you know, as far as Jews are concerned, and then it says, bo'odom uvabahemot, both a man and a beast, right?
Right.
Lihu, they are sanctified unto God. Okay? So, the Kedusha of the Bechor is right from the moment that it emerges from its mother's womb. But he says, Adrabah, I can show you on the contrary that Todah Shlomim maybe are more stringent than the Bechor, right? Chamur. Shekein to un smicho unisochim utenufas chaza v'shoik. Okay. You know why I say it's more stringent? I say it's more stringent because there are many, many more things that are involved if you bring either a Thanksgiving offering or a peace offering as compared to just bringing the bechor. What are some of these things? All right, the first thing is smicha. What is smicha? Smicha means that the person who offers the animal has to place his hands upon the head of the animal. Actually, he has to lean right on it with his hands. Okay? So that's one thing. That's smicha. Nesachim, at the time when they offer up an animal as a sacrifice, then they also have to pour a libation of wine on the Mizbeach. In the Beis HaMikdosh, there was a hole on the top. Actually, there were two holes. One was for water, which they had to use on Sukkot, you see. And the other one was one that they used at all times, namely, to pour a measure of wine. How much wine? This would depend upon whether it was an ox, or whether it was a sheep, or whether it was a goat. Okay? How much do you have to pour? It could be an isaron, okay? Or shnei esronim, or shlosha esronim. Naturally, the ox, if you offer that, you know, the bullock, then in that case it would be shlosha esronim. The others would either be two esronim or one isaron, right? But that had to accompany the animal that was being sacrificed. That was part of the ritual. And then tnufas chaza v'shok. And we mentioned that in the case of both Todah and Shlomim, you have to remove the breast and the right thigh of the animal. Okay, chaza v'shok. You give it to the kohen, And then the Kohen and you put your hands on the knee and you wave it. What do we mean by waving? It's similar to what we do with the lulav during the festival of Sukkot. You know what we do? We take it and we shake it to the right. Right behind, actually, is supposed to be, in other words, this is to the east, right, and this is to the south, to the west, to the north, and then up and down. So the same thing, it has to be waved this way, that way, that way. So, okay, the six directions, including, you know, the four points of the compass and up and down. Okay? So all this is part of the ritual. None of this was required in the case of the Bechor. So how can you argue with me, he says, talking about Rabbi Shimon, that, you know, the Bechor is more stringent? I can prove to you that the Torah and Shlomo are more stringent. Okay? Umayichumu dechatos ve'osho mi'bechor. And how about the stringency that you mentioned, that the chatos, the sin offering, or the osho, the trespass offering, are, you know, they have greater stringency than the Bechor. In what way? Shekein Kodshe Kodoshim. In the fact that these are considered Kodshe Kodoshim, whereas the others are considered, you know, the Bechor is considered Kodoshim Kalim. Okay? In other words, not as, it was a lighter. There was a difference, actually, where on the altar they sprinkled the blood. Either above a certain red line that they marked around the Mizbeach, or whether below. Okay? So, you tell me that, you know, that the chatas and the oshem, he said, are more stringent, the greatest stringency as compared to the Bechor, which doesn't have all these things that we mentioned before. Bechor, chomor, right. No, that already did. All right. My chumah the olah, the chatas oshem. Okay, right. Now we come to the olah, namely the burnt offering. You say that the olah, the burnt offering, is more stringent than that of the chatas and the yashim. Why? In the fact that shekein kolil, in that the burnt offering has to be consumed in its entirety, right? So he says, Adrabba, the contrary, I can prove to you that chatas v'ashim chamire, that they contain greater stringencies. In what way? Shekein mechapre, in the fact that they affect atonement. In other words, why does a person bring a chatos? So that we've discussed many times. He brings a chatos because he comes to the realization that he transgressed. One of the laws that he should have been careful, you know, not to transgress. For example, let's say that inadvertently he was Mechalel Shabbos. Okay? He didn't mean to do it deliberately, but he came to the realization that he had done so. So what happens after he realizes the fact that he had violated one of the laws of Shabbos? So he would bring a chatos, a sin offering, okay, in order to atone for the fact that he had done it. And so we find many others. And of course, we also learned previously as well that even if, let's say, the punishment would have been kores, for example, in other words, that the heavenly tribunal would punish him, okay, but nevertheless, the person can atone for the errors of his ways, for the transgressions that he committed, by bringing a chatas. Okay? Now, how about the Oshem? The Oshem, as I explained to you, the Torah mentions certain specific cases where this has to be brought. As, for example, Asham Yezela, Asham Ne'ila, Sham Shivcha Chavrucho, and so, you know, we say it, that's how we call it, okay? Sham Gezela, you've stolen something, and so after you you confess that you've robbed, and then you paid the premium, you know, whatever is demanded of you, you know, you restored the money, but after all, you still did the wrong thing. So therefore, in order to atone for the fact that you committed the sin of stealing, say you would bring it Osho, okay? Or, let's say, you made use of something that belonged to the Beis HaMikdash, that's known as Me'ilah, okay? And some other cases too, I mean, that the Torah specifically mentions, okay? So, in this case, again, what is the purpose of the Osho? Is in order to affect atonement, kapara. So he says these things affect atonement, right? Says Amar bechadus lohoshem chamire, right? Chikain mechapre, right? The chulhu chamire mi ola, and they are all more stringent than the ola. Right? In another way, what does he mean by all of them? By all of them he means, now, not only the Chatos and the Ashem, but even, he says, the Todah and the Shlomim and the Bechor, they are all of them more stringent than the Ola in this respect. There is Behu Shtei Achilos, that involved is that they have to be eaten by at least two parties. Party number one is actually the Mizbeach. In other words, the Mizbeach gets a share of the sacrifice. Okay? And all the, in other words, Chatos, Oshem, and so on and so forth, part of it has to be what? Burnt on the altar. The blood has to be sprinkled on the altar, but part of the animal too has to be offered up on the altar. Remember I spoke before about the Eburim, for example, about the Yegiv, Todah and Shlomim, but a part of it, as for example the Chelev, right, the Oseres HaKovein, Al HaKloyos, and so, you know, it's a lobe that covers, you know, the kidneys and so on, so that has to also be burnt on the altar, okay? So, in effect then, the altar is having a share of the food, so to speak. Of course, I'm talking about, you know, symbolically, right? But, who else gets to eat? The answer is the Kohen certainly is going to get to eat, and in the case of the Todah and Shlomim, you have a third party, namely the person who brought it and his family. They all have a share to eat. Yes. Yeah, but he's arguing that they're more chomer in that you have here two, three different parties that are involved in it, whereas in the case of the Ola, nobody's going to eat of it. Because it has to be burned, right. See, Rabbi Shimon argued. Okay, that was Rabbi Shimon's argument. That was Rabbi Shimon's argument, that Taka, you know, that Ola is more chamor because of the fact that, you know, it has to be consumed completely. And therefore, even if a Kohen, he said, ate it within Yerushalayim and within the Beis HaMikdash and after the blood has been sprinkled on the altar, right? But if he ate of it, he gets malchus because there's no question about the fact that he's transgressed, right? So this is an argument and a counter argument. No, Mela, you have an argument. Argue with Rob. He wants to show that on the basis of logic alone, you cannot really determine that a person should be punished for this, that, or the other thing. This is really what the intention is, because what Rab Shimon wanted to do is really to prove the fact that malchus should be incurred for each and every one of these different things if you did it deliberately.
Okay? Yeah. Right. Okay. You don't want to buy it? Don't buy it.
Of course, suppose they can make the argument that increases the number of people that participate in the mitzvah.
Yeah.
Whether that's a strong argument.
Well, what he's trying to say is really, stringency is that, you know, you have to observe more rules in connection with this than you would in the case of the old. This is what he's trying to say. There are many more things that have to be done, many more procedures, many more people are going to do this, that, and the other things. So this is really what he's trying to say. So therefore, from his point of view, he says, my argument is that it's more chamor than the yola, in contrast, you know, to your interpretation. So now the question is, by the Elido Ime, Kirab and Shimei. So he says, okay, why then did Rava give such a yashikayach to Rabbi Shimon that he said, if a person, if a woman gives birth, she should give birth to a genius like Rabbi Shimon?
Or else.
Right? Or else, yeah. But the or else we dispense. Okay. So he says, Dilamaidas Mira Leila di Day, Misoris Leila Kro. The answer is that on the basis of his own reasoning, that's what it means, what it says over there, so he was able to take the verse and twist it around in order to show, in order to bring out his point of view. So in other words, it's the academic brilliance of Rabbi Shimon that he's admiring at this particular point. And of course, Rashi goes into this business, you know, what did he do to twist it around? So the answer is, if we take a look at the Pasuk, we'll see that the words here in the Pasuk itself do not follow the order in which Rabbi Shimon advanced his argument. You see, Rabbi Shimon advanced his argument as follows. He said, if A is this and this, then B, which follows A, right? We can learn that B, let's say, is more severe, or maybe it's easier, or let's say it's cow, right, than A, which is more severe. And now that we've proved that in that case, let's take what B is, and then what is C. And then, having proven, you know, what C is, then we go on to D, and so on and so forth. But that's not the order in which the words occur over here in the pasuk. So this was Rava's objection. But he says, nevertheless, I admire the brilliance of Rabbi Shimon that he can take this verse and turn it around and make it in such a beautiful logical argument. This is what he said. Okay? Well, it's time for us to be davening. But he concludes by saying, the Dorishle, he twists around the Dorishle that he interprets, and makes an interpretation for his point of view. And so, of course, the next question that we're going to raise upon this, and with that I'll stop right now, is it says, Chimas Hirin Min Hadin. Tell me, says the Gemara at this point, can we really say that on the basis of logical argument you can warn a person that this and this is going to be his punishment if he disobeys? Maybe we cannot derive it from logical argument, but instead what? We have to have a pasuk in the Torah that specifically states that the punishment for violation of this would be this and this. This is the point that we're going to have to try. So, Neil Tashan, next week, we'll come to that point. Okay?
All right, so we're now on, still on our...
Yeah, we're still on Yud Zayin on the base.
Right.
Little by little, we are advancing. As you can see, there's a Facebook that takes up a page and a half over here. I didn't think that would do the entire Facebook.
It's
right, so you heard my June, last question over there. Okay, repeat that last minute.
June 5th, 1996. And we're on Yud Zion
over the base, right near the bottom of the page.
Okay.
All right.
6 lines from the bottom.
Right. As we heard my voice from last week, that right now, you see, the questioning, the whole business, I mean, Rabbi Shimon, he really was very, very brilliant, right? Shimon ben Lovitch, very brilliant with his reasoning. He took a pasuk and he showed you that if you accept premise A, then premise B has to follow. If you accept premise B, then premise C has to follow, and so on and so forth. Okay? But along came Rava, right? And he said, wait a minute, he said, hold it. That's what we had at the top of the side over here. That Rava said, late. Guy is brilliant. Jewish mother should only have Yiddish or kinder with brains like Rabbi Shimon, okay? But, he says, I can point that his argument, I can give you a counter argument, right? You say that this is more important, I say this is more important. You say that this is more important, I say that the other thing is more important. And of course, he brings reason for it. That's, for example, you know, the fact that, for example, we would say that the olah, since it has to be burned completely, should be more important than what? Than the chatas and the yoshim, right? Which, although they are kodshei kodoshim, right?